So yes, you're going to miss out on Trevor Lawrence.
I know. Oh.
Why are you going to miss out on him?
Because Trevor Lawrence is now, he is put out there. You never know if I come back for my senior year.
That's just the Jets.
That's just the Jets.
Yeah. And now Tebow. Tebow saying, don't be surprised.
There was that story in the Post last week that said he has advisors advising him that if the Jets have the number one pick, to strongly consider returning to school.
I think he's going to strong arm them to hire Dabo.
Dabo's had this thing where...
It'd be great if the only strong arm you ever saw of him is him giving it to you instead of playing for you.
I don't know exactly how Dabo's done this. I will say that with a wry smile and a wink to you.
I got it.
But remember when he had all those first-rounders on defense? They didn't come out immediately. They all had first-round grades. They were eligible for the draft. They came back. Travis Etienne has been there since the Obama administration.
You remember me telling you when the first time I saw him running down a field in 1980, I was like, that's the fastest dude in college football. It does feel like that was during the first Bush administration.
Now, I understand it's at a position that you probably don't get drafted that high, but fastest guy in college football, I kind of feel like you have NFL draft value, right? Travis Etienne, still at Clemson. Still, you know, outside of Trevor Lawrence, the best player in the conference.
But you're marveling at players staying there, not going to the NFL.
Dabo has this mystical power to keep these guys in school, so you can't completely rule it out with a Trevor Lawrence.
I'd advise Trevor Lawrence to talk to Matt Leinart. I mean, see how that worked out.
I've got a couple of...
And plus, I don't want you if you don't want to play for me.
Oh, here we go.
I do want you desperately.
Myles Garrett didn't want to play for the Browns. I'm happy.
So I've got a couple of questions for you guys about this as it regards to Trevor Lawrence and his power, because he realized, and this is always an interesting thing to me, when kids become adults or start to become adults right in front of our eye, and they end up in a place where you hear their voice being used, and you saw that Trevor Lawrence was an advocate who used his power to bring football back, to help bring ACC football and college football back. And I thought to myself as that was happening, that's interesting leadership. Go the next step, Trevor. Ask for money. Do what the Pac-12 is doing. Bomani actually had some conversations with people in the Clemson program and stuff. They didn't want to take that next step on asking for money. So will Trevor Lawrence in this instance show the adult strength required to exert and flex very much his power by saying, I will not play for the Jets. I will not have them ruin me the way they ruined Le'Veon Bell. Will he do what Eli Manning did because his father? Do you know the history of that? That not just that Philip Rivers went to San Diego and that Eli Manning said, I will not go there. I'm going to New York. Do you know the history of why specifically that was done? Eli Manning did that.
No, and just quickly, Trevor Lawrence also can hold up Sam. Look what you did to Sam Darnold. I mean, I do not know the entire backstory.
Well, the history is Archie Manning always played for losers. Archie Manning was a great quarterback. His dad linked at the hip to Eli Manning. His dad's own playing career was the instruction for, you do not want to be great for a bad franchise that will ruin you, because that was Archie Manning's career. And so he wasn't going to let it happen to his sons. Trevor Lawrence has real and legitimate power here to threaten to go back to school if he wants to do it the polite way. That's the polite way. That's not how Eli Manning did it. That's not how John Elway did it.
Correct.
John Elway threatened with leverage baseball. The polite way is to threaten to go back to school.
I also have to see what class Eli and John Elway were. Maybe they didn't have any eligibility left.
Yeah, just go back to school. Don't force the Jets to trade the pick or do anything like that, or guess or draft you, and then you end up making a stink of it. So.
Yeah, John Elway had the baseball thing to fall back on. I got to see if Eli Manning was a senior at Ole Miss when he came out.
Regardless, they made a big public mess, and Trevor Lawrence could, if he doesn't, why would you want to play for the Jets, though? And I say this to guys, I don't say this to tease you or insult you. I'm saying if you're somebody who's got Trevor Lawrence's value.
Right.
You see the way the Jets are losing and how far they are from winning. You see that the Jets' history of failure
sure.
is pretty strong, and history of recent failure is pretty strong.
Listen, it's a fair question. If you're a kid coming out of college, why would you want to play for that organization? But Joe Burrow could have said the same thing about Cincinnati, and there were rumors that maybe he didn't want to play in Cincinnati, but you know what? He got drafted by the Bengals. He's an NFL quarterback, and he has enough confidence to think, hey, I'm going to make the Bengals pretty good. Here's what I would do if I were Trevor Lawrence. If you're worried about that team wrecking you as a player, then you do have the power and the control, and you could dictate who your coaches are. If you're worried about the coaches, you certainly have say over who your coach can be.
This is the part that I find fascinating about some of this and the finances of some of this, because you know how I'm interested in power structure and player empowerment, and watching the last 10 years of LeBron, just how he's realized in front of us, no, I'm going to make all my own choices and decisions, and everyone's going to work around me. He learned that, right? He is now going to, you saw Danny Green said
yeah.
that LeBron might not start in December, and yeah. the league will now have to make a decision of whether to postpone the December start for LeBron, like they changed the All-Star game
sure.
because he wanted more rest,
mm-hmm.
or to start without him, which they can because they've got plenty of other storylines. But the part that I find interesting is the idea that Trevor Lawrence has legitimate power here. You said that you're drafted. Burrow was drafted to break the construct of the draft. We have learned to live with the salary cap just because, so owners aren't fighting each other. They've agreed to terms on that. They've collectively bargained that. The draft is a stupidity, Stugatz. I understand that we love it, but in terms of player power, it's the opposite of that. You have to go where it's literally something that is associated when you're sent off to fight in a war for death.
Right.
Like a draft is the lack of freedom. Trevor Lawrence has real power and real freedom to say bleep off rules, bleep off structure, bleep off draft. I'm going where I wish to go.
He does. He has that power. Not many players have had the power that Trevor Lawrence is going to have entering an NFL draft. But I think you also, as a player, you have to realize if you do it that way, the bad teams never become good. If Joe Burrow doesn't go to Cincinnati, Cincinnati's always going to be bad.
I mean, the Browns have been bad for 30 years.
I know, but
this thing that's supposed to help make them good. By the way, Eli Manning was indeed a
Mike,
senior, so he couldn't pull that card.
But it did.
So he did. It got ugly with Eli.
But it did help you become good. It took a while, but it helped you become good. It helped you get Baker Mayfield. It helped you get Myles Garrett.
Yeah, but it also helped me get Brandon Weeden.
Once you declare for the draft, you're ineligible to play college football again. So does he really have that power? Because what's the move? If he declares for the draft, he gets drafted by a team that doesn't like him. He's going to ask to be traded. And if they say no, the answer is no. What do you do there? And in terms of like, why do you get drafted? I mean, it's guaranteed, right? Anything could happen if he returns to college. Look at what happened to Dak Prescott. He didn't sign a long-term deal. And now is he going to get that deal? I don't know. So if you're a guy that needs money or is in a position, I don't know what Trevor Lawrence's situation is, but it's guaranteed, and you can prove that you're the guy that can take a team to the next level.
The parts that I find interesting about the infringements on the freedom are the following. The sort of systemic thing that ends up aiding business and ownership and management instead of labor. Because of the salary cap, stupidity meant to fix costs. And because that salary cap has now made it so that Trevor Lawrence can only make a certain amount of money when he comes to the league by rule, collectively bargain. You see how these infringements of a draft, you go where we say you go and you make what we say you make, ends up, all of us would say, Trevor Lawrence is coming out tomorrow, free market. What do you think that's going to look like? How much power do you think Trevor Lawrence is going to have to play wherever he wants to play? If the case were free market, no salary cap, no draft, you have real power coming out of college, real legitimate power, free marketplace. But it's not that. And it's not that because the pros work with college to create this system where they have a free minor league and they fix the costs and the freedoms on their employees all the way through the structure of the thing. And so Trevor Lawrence can threaten to go back to school instead of declaring for the draft. But there are rules there about when you get an agent, you can't go back. Like, there are so many rules in place to make sure that you guys want the Dodgers governed at the end of a season celebrating during a pandemic. You want other people telling them how to decide, yet all the rules are in place to impinge the freedoms of people that we think are powerful that don't have any real power because the structure has the power.
Trevor Lawrence is in the position where he actually doesn't need an agent. You kind of know exactly what the number one overall draft pick's going to get based off of previous years. Everyone knows that he's the best player available. He also has a life balance question. I know he's engaged to get married. Charlie Weider has told us that. He's a made man for what he did in Clemson. Yep. That guy can have countless car dealerships in South Carolina. He is a made man. If he doesn't play another down, that guy is going to be beyond wealthy in that part of the country. Right now it's a question of, do I want my kids' kids to be as wealthy as I've always dreamed of being? He's got great choices, got the world by the balls, but I also don't think he's ever going to say bleep off. I don't think he's ever cursed.
The Trevor Lawrence Chevrolet. I mean, I love that. I think you're right. I mean, he does. He has car dealerships. I'm trying to imagine in a free market what team this year Trevor Lawrence would choose. Like, I'm trying
but,
to
but
imagine.
What is he going to get versus what
I think
he,
it'd be the Bears, by the way.
What is he going to actually get versus what he would get if there were freedom here? A freedom, by the way, and I don't know how the audience is receiving what we're talking about, but a freedom any of us would want if we were in that position.
Oh, yeah. But the draft and the salary cap protect the owners from themselves, because how many busts would have been given $200 million contracts out of college? Come here, make my team matter. Jerry Jones would be in on every single quarterback
Marcus Russell
that's ever been eligible. You do these things to protect yourself from yourself.
A lot of the same teams, though, would probably be in play in a free market, right? Because it'd be teams without a quarterback that'd be throwing a ton of money at getting a quarterback. So he'd make more money, but it'd probably be between the same teams, because why would he want to sign up if he's going to be the number one pick to be a backup somewhere?
You don't know, but I see that's where I think it would be interesting, because maybe he thinks he's better than the guy they have, even though they have a solid starter. Like, I would love the friction if, God forbid, like San Francisco wanted Lawrence having Jimmy Garoppolo, who was a quarter away from winning a Super Bowl, and how mad Jimmy would be about learning about that.
Mike says, and he's not entirely wrong, Mike says it's the rules are in place to save the owners from themselves. But the reason the rules are in place goes above that. It's why they're collectively bargained. It's to save the business. It's to save everybody, their ability to make money, because guys who buy into football teams are always selling and cashing out and making money. And they can't promise that if you've got Jerry Jones. Jerry Jones would absolutely spend himself into debt just trying to buy LSU every year after they win the championship.
I get that argument. I was just posing it out there, playing devil's advocate. But there are plenty of examples of sports teams and sports leagues that don't have salary caps, right? Major League Baseball. Granted, this year the best team, the most expensive team, won. World Soccer. It buys you a pretty decent lottery ticket. Like, you'll get in a Champions League every year if you spend over the bar, but it doesn't guarantee you the European title. And some owners cry poor, but they're not in these. They didn't get to the point that they are in life with making terrible financial decisions.
But Mike, that's why it doesn't guarantee you titles, but it does. The structures, all of them throughout sports, the structures, they guarantee you profit. They guarantee you money. They guarantee you success as a business, because these franchises don't go bankrupt, Stugatz. Like, the thing that the structure guarantees you is that you will be able to make money no matter the circumstances.
Because they keep appreciating in value. No matter what, no matter how bad things get, outside of like the New Orleans Pelicans.
They're foolproof.
They actually lost money in that endeavor for the most part. Look at Donald Sterling was the worst owner in American sports history.
Well, and
his punishment was $2 billion.
And a fool. Like, he is the fool in foolproof. Like, it buying a team is something that is going to make you money at every turn. And so while the structure is what it is, though, Stugatz, you must hurt. It must hurt you to think
deeply.
that Trevor Lawrence, like, you basically want a, you as a Jets, running the Jets gulag, want a lifetime of imprisonment for Trevor Lawrence. You want to take away more of his freedom by putting him in that huddle. You want, Stugatz wants to personally shackle himself to Trevor Lawrence as he leaves Clemson and force him, drag him by his hair to the Jets headquarters, and then he wants to look at me and say the rules are fair.
Stugatz, what we're doing to you is what we're doing to you, though, is a little unfair.
It is.
Every year, there is this leaked out, hey, top prospect doesn't want to go into the draft if so-and-so team is atop the draft. Look at me. I'm a Browns fan.
Yeah.
Happens every year.
Mm-hmm.
We keep using Eli Manning as an example. That team is not even in that city anymore. It doesn't happen. I think you're going to be fine.
I don't.
I just,
although with Clemson.
I don't,
with
Mike.
With Clemson,
I'm really, I'm starting to think about this. I don't think I'm going to be fine.
When that entire defensive line comes back and Etienne is still running like a 4-2-40.
Mike, they're so bad. I wouldn't want to spend one down as the quarterback of the Jets behind that offensive line.
Stugatz, do you understand, though, how the pressure of the structure on a guy? Because the most recent time we saw this was with Dak Prescott. Everything contractually for Dak Prescott this offseason suggested that the right play for him was to hold out.
Yep.
And test Jerry Jones. Can you imagine if this Dallas season had started the way it looks now and Dak Prescott had been on the sidelines for a couple of these games because he was holding out to get his money, but he wouldn't do the thing that would hurt the team? Ezekiel Elliott was willing to do the thing that would allegedly hurt the team.
He and was ended doing up, it.
And he got paid.
Yeah.
And now he's fumbling but making his money.
Correct.
Dak Prescott did the business decision that was team-friendly. Because if he had held out, Stugatz, Jerry Jones caved when Jimmy Johnson started 0-2 on Emmitt Smith's holdout. He caved on Emmitt Smith's holdout because he started 0-2. Imagine this Cowboys season starting this way and Dak Prescott holding out.
And Andy Dalton having the game that he had when he started. Jerry Jones would give him the richest contract in NFL history. I'm serious. I'm not even joking. He's that emotional and he's that reactionary and he's that rich.
Well, the franchise tag is a little unfair, particularly to running backs, which is why you see that position actually hold out more than any of the other position, because it takes the average of the top five highest paid contracts, I think, at that position. Running backs are a lot lower paid than, say, the quarterback position. Dak Prescott's like, well, that's pretty damn good money. I'm essentially like the third highest paid quarterback.
He made $30 million for one season.
Yeah.
Right?
So am I really going to hold out for $6 million year over year?
But it's long term.
Oh, I understand. And he would certainly wish to have that security now, coming off an injury that's going to be hard to envision him being the same type of athlete.
Your guy Odell got injured. He's still making $13 million next year because he signed a long term deal.
The parts that are interesting to me about this as it relates to power jangling of the structure, Stugatz, are that we have become so trained and sort of lobotomized that we don't think of it. Like, the draft is normal. The salary cap is normal. And because those things are normal, Trevor Lawrence doesn't have nearly the power he should have. Trevor Lawrence doesn't know the power that he has, Stugatz.
Well, he's starting to realize it, though.
Well, but I mean, LeBron's been trying to teach him all this for the last 10 years.
Right. He concerns me, too. I mean, I got to be honest with you. Hey, LeBron's in every athlete's ear. You know he's telling Trevor Lawrence right now, hey, don't go play for that franchise.
We do know that. Do we know that? Why is he in Trevor Lawrence's ear?
I think LeBron views himself as the commissioner of all athletes.
LeBron was an Indians fan when he was in Cleveland, and last night he was a Dodger fan. Like, LeBron, you've got LeBron just wandering around telling Trevor Lawrence, hey, Clutch Sports, you don't want to go, let us manage you. We'll get you the real power.
100%. LeBron is a front runner. Do you not think he's a Clemson fan? What's the matter with
he's
you?
An Ohio State fan.
No. He's a Clemson fan now.
Trevor Lawrence feels more like a Lee Steinberg guy. What a glow up that guy's had, by the way.
Oh, Mahomes.
Dude, cash cow. Lee Steinberg was like a joke. His personal life in shambles, no clients, and then all of a sudden the guy with a $500 million contract, trust him.
We should actually get him on for a South Beach session, because his story is super interesting. He went from being the centerpiece of why Jerry Maguire was made, even as Drew Rosenhaus told everybody that Jerry Maguire was made about him, to spiraling into some pretty heavy drinking that ended up ruining his career. And now he's back with Mahomes as his lead guy.
He DMs me all the time. He really loves the show. He loves Dan. Okay. But he enjoys the show. He listens to it every day and he sends me direct messages. I think it would be a good idea, South Beach Session, because I know the angle.
No. You know the angle, right?
No, this came from
boys. You know the angle.
Time out. I told Dan about this a month ago. In my defense,
let's just go around the horn. What's the angle Sugats is working?
To be represented by him?
No. Chris, why did I go to you first? Just to get Mahomes on is the answer.
Thank you.
So, Chris, I wanted to talk to you about something this week because you, as part of this show, are a father-son collaboration. This that we've created around here is meant to be family in structure. I've done for many years a television show with my father. You're now doing a lot of work with your father, trying to make him better at all the things he's terrible at and failing at every turn. But the sports gets passed down. From generation to generation, my oldest relationship in this profession is with your father. I was a young reporter at the Miami Herald. I didn't know anything. I didn't know anyone. And he was very kind to me from the outset of my career. And over the years, 40 years with him at the Miami Herald, he has clamored for the trading of Dan Marino to keep Scott Mitchell. He did an interview with Channel 10 WPLG. I believe it was Cambrell Marshall, Roy. It might have been before Cambrell Marshall, in which his face was pixelated because he dared to suggest that the Dolphins should trade Marino.
So funny.
Not since Marino have the Dolphins had a week like this one. You can make the argument that Dante Culpepper had a lot of enthusiasm around him, but it wasn't youth enthusiasm. It was broken guy, can he repair himself enthusiasm. We've seen him do it before. This is a blank slate when it comes to professional Tua. This is the week where hope is what generations pass down to the next generation about fandom. Like, there will be a lot of people at that game caring about the Dolphins during a pandemic just to see that kid play. We saw the numbers on Barry Jackson from the Miami Herald saying when he threw two passes in garbage time of a game, the very end of a game, for 9 yards, 32,000 people in South Florida rushed to their televisions in order.
So accurate. So accurate, those throws.
Right. I feel like that's light, that number. I figured more would have tuned into that game. I mean,
so what is your father and what are you doing as a family? I saw on your podcast you started arguing on Greg Cody's podcast featuring Greg Cody. You argued about it, and then you recycled it and reheated it over here, and then you argued about it. Is there anything that's feel good in Ted Lasso, or is it just you two turning it into content worth arguing about instead of like, hey, this is a pretty cool moment for a father and son to share around sports. We both care about the quarterback of the Dolphins.
That's the angle I was taking. This is so much bigger than Ryan Fitzpatrick. I'm just so excited. I got emotional. Literally emotional during that last minute where you were just kind of setting up the whole thing. This is huge. I don't think we're going to get all the answers this week against Aaron Donald, but this is unlike anything I've ever experienced in sports in terms of just, this could be really great, but I don't know.
What if you get no answers? How many answers are you looking for Sunday?
No, wait a minute.
Because no answers is equally as depressing.
Hold on a second, though. I really don't know what you're going to get. I know Mike Ryan still doesn't know if he has a quarterback, continues to talk himself into it.
Yeah, you put a little respect on the AFC Offensive Player of the Week's name, okay?
You would take Trevor Lawrence right now.
Oh, yeah.
So it's been, a few weeks of getting answers on Baker Mayfield. We've got how many seasons and a half of getting answers on Baker
Mayfield? To be fair, we're only on 2.5 seasons with Baker and his fourth.
You're
coach.
Not going to have many answers. You get one throw and you're going to attach that hope to it. You're going to get one throw. If you get one PFF big time throw.
Oh,
yes.
Let me get like it doesn't have to be a big time throw. First quarter, Devontae Parker, 70-yard touchdown. down. Oh, my God.
Would you take that moment in a loss as opposed to a 16-13 victory?
Just one moment that feeds your hope?
With no moments.
I need the moment. Right, I need the one moment where he looks good.
All right. Is Tua going to give you a moment on Sunday? That's basically that's not all you want, but it's the bare minimum of what you want, correct?
That's right. That is I need a moment. I need a moment, a play where I'm like, there's my quarterback.
All right.
You're going to get a few emotional moments, right? As soon as he is seen for the first time, it's going to be the roar. Oh. It's going to be the roar of 13,000.
The echoey tinny roar.
It will feel like 30, though, it's Dan. Not,
you know what? I'm with Mike on this.
It's going to feel like 17,000.
It can't even be a roar if it's echo and tinnying.
The Herbert chants won't start until 2 3-and-outs, right? They'll give him 1 3-and-out, right? But then the second 3-and-out, the Herbert chants start?
No, then the Herbert, you're going to have a little bit of patience with this.
I'm not kidding.
The Rams are good.
You'd start it.
The Rams are a really good team. No one wants to talk about the Rams anymore because it's not as sexy. They're running at the 2018 clip where they got it to the Super Bowl. It's just not with one guy in Gurley anymore. They're doing it with three different guys. It's a good team.
I would pay money, actually, to be in the room with Chris the one time Aaron Donald gets free and he is charging it to
I think that's your moment. Taking a hit. Yeah, falling to the ground,
getting up.
Donald on his shoulder and getting up.
Really? You think if he strips sacked by Aaron Donald and he just gets up?
He gets up and dusts himself off. If he makes a show.
Yes, and comes back out for the next drive.
That's great. I love that you guys are applying the expectations you would on a toddler. On a toddler.
I'm convinced he has a baby hip. Damn, that's a line. Baby step.
He really had the better line than you did. I wanted to get into, though, you said the Rams are a good team, Mike. Mike is still hurting from stepping on Stugatz's line.
You want me to say it again clean? Or?
Yeah. Let's edit it. Go ahead.
Let's do it again.
Steps. Yeah, that's fine.
That's good. Much better. Edit all that together. Yeah. Don't leave it in like this at all. Leave it in this way.
I will not.
You mentioned that the Rams are a good team.
Yes, they are a good football team.
Well, hold on. Let me just puncture a hole in that. I believe they are a good scheme. I'm not sure they're a good team only for this reason, because I believe that those are the two questionable 5-2 teams that just played, Chicago and the Rams. There are a couple of others, Buffalo and Cleveland.
Don't you dare say.
Buffalo and Cleveland.
Bastard.
Also a little questionable. But the thing about the Rams is all of their wins are against the Bears and the NFC East. And so it does make it hard to tell because they have looked good against those teams, but everybody's looked good against the NFC.
Well, they're arguably in the strongest division in football. You can make an argument for the AFC North where the 5-2 Cleveland Browns reside. But look, man, it's not a hot take to say that they're good. They're 5-2. They're 2 years removed from a Super Bowl. Jared Goff, I know, is puzzling at times because he's better than a lot of the quarterbacks out there. And if you just look at his numbers, you're like, wow, this guy might be on a Hall of Fame trajectory. But none of us would really take him over.
None of us even know. None of us even know.
I would take Justin Fields over.
None of us even know how good he is. Like, Jared Goff is the hardest quarterback to evaluate in the sport.
They're plus 52, just to give you some differential here. They're plus 52 at 5-2. The Packers, 5-1, are just plus 38.
Stugatz, I believe that the Rams are good. I believe if you're I believe that's a 10 or 11 win team.
By their loss at Buffalo, I'm like, okay, maybe it's a different Rams team this year. Maybe they're back.
The problem is that division. Dan, you might be right, because that division is so loaded where San Francisco's 4-3 and in last place.
Right, three teams from a division can make it now with the expanded playoffs. It's probably going to happen in the AFC North, probably going to happen with the NFC West. But I just hate this thing where we dismiss a team that's, they're not good. They're 5-2. They're good. Are they elite? But let's not do the thing where if they're not in contention, direct contention for a Super Bowl, we're calling them
not good. Well, but this is one of the things that makes it hard for me, okay? Of the 5-win teams, okay, the ones that you can question, because I believe we'd look at most of the 5-win teams and all of us would say, yes, they're good. The Bucs, everyone, they're good, they're good, they're good.
Baltimore.
Cleveland has a minus 21 point differential. Again, these are small samples, Dugat, so the point differentials don't actually matter that much because a blowout impacts you too much.
Take point differential out of it. It is fair to have questions about Cleveland considering Odell
just went down. The ones with the problematic point differential are the Bills. the Browns, and the Bears. Those are the three teams that I think all of us would look at, and we would say they might be good, but we think they're in that second tier of good. We don't think of them, Seattle, New England. I was going to say by 20 years of habit, I was going to say New England.
Do we know Arizona's good? They're a 5-2 team. And I'll tell you, they're plus 57. I mean,
I think Arizona's good. Their quarterback's good.
I don't know, right? I think they're definitely a good team. They might even be a playoff team, but I don't understand why we don't look at Arizona the same way that we look at Buffalo, Chicago, or Cleveland. Those teams have impressive wins, and we do the thing where, well, who did they beat? Well, actually, when Cleveland took on the Indianapolis Colts were the number one defense in the league by a wide margin.
Chicago beat the Buccaneers.
Yes, and the Bills have an impressive victory over a team that I'm arguing is good in the LA Rams. So, and I look at their losses, right? You want to ask me how many good wins do they have? How many bad losses do they have? The Cleveland Browns don't have a bad loss, so I don't think they're a bad football team. Now, they would have if they lost on Sunday, but they didn't. They were favored by 3.5, and they won by 3. That's the league, brother.
I know. It's funny, though, to say that they are good at 5-2, but at 4-3, we would have been back to...
At 4-3, we would have shipped Baker Mayfield out.
There were 11 seconds left in that game, and from right there, if I said to you, are the Browns good, yes or no, you'd have to say, let me watch these next 11 seconds play out.
Yeah. Otherwise, it would have came down to a Cody Parkey field goal.
It is the league, though, Stugatz. It's so ridiculous that all of these games come down. The Atlanta Falcons, honest to God, Stugatz, we're sitting here talking about the good teams in the league.
Yep.
If I told you tomorrow your team was playing against Chicago or Atlanta, who would you fear more? Like, I know Atlanta's going to lose it at the end.
Are you kidding me? Julio Jones.
I go Khalil Mack.
No, you would not.
The fact that it's a question, though. Aren't the Falcons 1-6?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, the Bears barely edged them out.
But listen, the league is so funny. I think Mike is right on this. I'm looking at the Rams' losses. They lost to the Bills at Buffalo 35-32. I mean, they're a good team.
I think the Rams are a good team. I think it's fair to ask about some of these others whether they're good. I think that Chicago and Cleveland, these are fair questions. Buffalo,
I think Chicago stinks.
Buffalo. Yes.
Cleveland's got the worst defense in the league right now. Which is actually a testament to Myles Garrett, because he's probably the defensive player of the year on the worst defense of the league. And you'd have to ask yourself, well, how could he help the worst defense in the league? Imagine how bad they would be without him.
And the Bears are the same. They're the anti-Falcons. I mean, they could just as easily be 0-6. I'm serious. Every game comes down to it's a field goal. I mean.
But isn't that the league, baby? Or what did you say? Brother.
That's the league, brother.
Like, why did you feel the need to throw that brother at the end there?
I felt like it hammered home the point. When I hit you with a brother, I saw you take a pause. It took a beat.
Yeah, I did. Oh, it was the league, brother. My nose was stinging. Like, you had punched. Punched me.
Yeah, he's right. That is the league, brother.
I was looking at you the way Giuliani was looking at Borat when Borat said you should stick to marrying your cousin.
The Bears' biggest margin of victory this year is a touchdown.
That's the league, brother. Lest you think that he is a Billy come lately on this analytics conversation that is dominating the sports world today, I need you to know that Billy Gill was railing against win probabilities during Falcons Lions on Sunday. He doesn't want these advanced analytics that are corrupting sports for the Tampa Bay Rays that make them take out Blake Snell when he's dominating. But you saw the win probability again during Falcons-Lions. You are railing unreasonably, I feel like, against whenever the win probability pops up all over sports, that you're whacking it like whack-a-mole.
It's a stupid stat. It's not me railing against math. It's stupid. And Fox puts it up every week, and every week it ends up being wrong. 4% probably. I was watching the Lions and Falcons, and it popped up. And I heard that at one point it was 2%, and then it went up to 4%. When they're on the 11-yard line, down by 5 or 6 or whatever it was. I think they were down by 6 because they needed the field goal to win. And it said 4% chance. And it's like, well, he's obviously going to throw the ball. They're at the 11. There's one play because there's 3 seconds left. And you've decided that this is going to fail with 96% certainty against the Falcons, who have had this happen to them 6,000 times this year alone. How did you get to 4%?
That's a great question.
You're absolutely right. Whenever you watch all these presidential polls, there's a margin of error. There needs to be a margin for Falcons and Lions. Because simultaneously, you mentioned in your weekend observations, most Falcons game ever, most Lions game ever.
Yep. Normal team, percentage chance of winning the game. Falcons, percentage chance of winning the game. Yes, there needs to be a caveat.
The algorithm actually should have just started like shaking and short-circuiting. And on the screen, the graphic should have just blown up. Like, you should have seen sparks on it, and it was on the fritz. We can't do the math on this because it involves, we don't have the algorithm for Lions and Falcons.
Okay, but pros and cons, right? Like, I'm assuming they're trying to tell you a story that this is going to be one of the greatest improbable comebacks, 96% chance they're going to lose, right? So, wow, look at what the Lions did. They should have lost 96% of the time, right? But instead, I'm watching it, and maybe I'm the problem. Maybe I'm not looking at it the right way. But I'm watching it, and I'm like, yeah, that's dumb, because I could have told you that was probably going to happen with the way the season's played out. So 96%, you just look like you put up a stat that was not important, and you did it just to look smart, and it ended up being wrong. But I guess they're trying to tell you, look how great this comeback was. Look, oh, yeah, I know what you're thinking. This is just the Lions and the Falcons. No, this is one of the most improbable comebacks you will see today.
What the producers should do is throw up how many times the Falcons have lost a game that their win probability has been 98, too. That's a perfect caveat for it.
I love that. Yes.
Yeah, like they're actually, you know, 6-8 in games that they've had a 98 win probability.
Mike, the part that bums me out about the cathedral that we make of sports entertainment in terms of how it's televised, imagine how much more, and you can't do this because football's too serious, but imagine how much more fun it would have been if you'd seen a stamp graphically coming on the screen that was over the win probability and was just the television show just joking with you, making the joke, here's what the win probability is when you falcon in the falconing.
Right.
When you lioning
0%
the lioning, like if you'd seen the jokes being made in real time, but we can't do that because it's too much. It's too much. It's too serious. Teams, fans would not like that. Correct. Little jokes being made during.
Well, Falcon fans wouldn't like that. You would. I don't know. I mean, certain fans don't take it that seriously. I think most fans probably wouldn't like it if it was at the expense of their own team. But everyone would love it if it was at someone else's.
Here's my dream scenario in which I would never actually score an NFL broadcasting contract, but whatever. You know how the best game gets Joe Buck and Troy Aikman?
Yeah.
Lions Falcons gets just two stand-up comics. Let's
yes, go. That's a great
funny
idea.
Yeah,
right,
you flex like the worst game. Yeah. And then you get excited like, oh man, what's going to be? Is it going to be Bengals Jags? Are we going to get the two stand-up comedians in this game? What's going to be the Kimmel game?
I like that.
Chris, are you soothed at all? As someone who wants the math done for him, are you soothed at all when you see, and as a gambler, when your team or the team you want to win has the better win probability on the screen? Are you in any way soothed when that number comes up?
I live and die by that number. Yes. I take it to the bank. I bet the game live. I go on. And yes, if I'm higher percentage than 50 to win, I place an in-game bet on my team every time.
As a Jet fan
over here,
as a Jet fan, I'm not familiar with that number. I mean,
yes, you led. See, that would be another funny place to put it. When you were leading 3-0 against the Bills, Jets win probability, zero.
Zero.
Just zero. It's always zero on the side of the that's
pre-game.
What I'm saying. Just put stand-up comics in there. Look, Jets-Dolphins for the last 20 years? Tell me that wouldn't have been better. Just two stand-up comics, and I'll figure it out. Bring in a rules official every once in a while to explain the rules to us, and that's it.
Well, we had Cephalo, I mean.
Which was a laugh riot.
Unnecessary.
It really was unnecessary.
Old
like
Steffi.
If that gets back to Cephalo.
He invented the live spot.
I feel bad. I had to be a good teammate there for you, too.
But it seemed like a gratuitous joke. You just
I went to
took
his wine
out
bar in the Grove. He's a fine lad.
When?
Cephalo? I went to Cephalo's, like, man, feels like 9 years ago, 8 years ago.
Wait a minute. Isn't he still a popular conservative morning radio host down here? Or is that?
I believe so.
Or was that many years ago that he was doing that? Well, also, he's still doing the Dolphin radio broadcasts, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And Saki.
And Jason Taylor is doing them as well, right? As they as look with the modern times, the Dolphin booth
Jason Taylor
gets diverse.
Is it really? It's not.
It's not Nat Moore.
I think you're right. Jason Taylor's a part of it. I don't know why I'm surprised.
I haven't heard
But because you're just used to it being Greasy and Joe Rose.
Chris, who's the Dolphins radio team?
Honestly, I haven't heard a radio game by them in a long time.
Are you guys telling me that I'm literally the only one who knows around here what the Dolphins radio team is?
I'm telling you that you're the only person in your car on football Sundays.
Who listens to Dolphins games on the
radio?
You're
driving
around. I thought it was Greasy.
Greasy was ousted, I thought, for Jason Taylor. I thought that Greasy...
Well, you know what? We didn't get preseason TV games. Maybe that's a preseason TV broadcast decision.
Jason Taylor has been added to the radio broadcast team for the Miami Dolphins this year.
Yep.
Is Greasy also there, or did he oust Greasy? Or is it the four of them and Bo Camper? Is Bo Camper still roaming
the sidelines?
There's
Bo Camper.
Way Joe Rose isn't still a part of that radio broadcast.
No. He is. He's there.
Yeah, Jason Taylor, Joe Rose, Jimmy Cephalo, Kim Bo Camper, radio broadcast crew, Spanish broadcast crew, Rolly Martin and Eduardo Martel.
It's still Rolly Martin out here. All right, listen. I want to do this. This is what I want to do.
Give Greg Camarillo a gig.
Stugatz, you need to start telling stories about the times that you negotiated the radio rights for the radio station of the Miami Dolphins. Like, you have not told those stories. Stugatz was the sleazy general manager of 790 The Ticket.
Yeah, thank you.
And he was wandering into these big-time meetings where Kimbo Camper was thrusting a gnarled hand at him to shake hands on a deal and then betraying him. Like, we need to hear some of those stories, because he never ended up signing with you, despite the handshake agreement with the largest bare hand you've ever had in your hand.
He totally leveraged me for more money, and he won because he's Kimbo Camper and I'm me.
He just used you?
I mean, he took up my entire office. The guy is massive, okay?
But he went in there to negotiate, and what was he negotiating? What was he was going to give you what was he doing for you?
He had an offer. I think it was something Dolphin pregame, postgame. He had an offer from 560 QAM, which is now 560 The Joe.
That's where we're on. We're on 560 The Joe.
We are. And so I matched, or I increased the offer, which I'm sure he took back to WQAM and got more money from them. I viewed it as a small victory because I made WQAM pay more money for some guy I didn't really want, to be honest with you. And with all due respect to Bo.
Wait a minute. You can't do those two sentences next to each other.
I can.
A guy I really didn't want, and with all due respect to Bo.
I mean, it's Bo. I love Bo. He's a wonderful guy. I really do. Kimbo Camper.
Finish your thought. With all due respect to Bo, he's a wonderful man, yes.
I didn't want him. I wanted QAM. Like, he may have think he got the best of me. I got the best of WQAM, The Joe. Okay?
You outsmarted them. Okay.
Yeah. They got you back plenty.
No, they did. Now, with the Dolphin, Jimmy Cephalo sat in my office one day, and because he wanted more money. And he told me the reason he wanted more money is he invented the live spot. Mike, I laughed the same exact way you just did.
Okay? Mike, would you look up for me, or would one of you guys look up for me Jimmy Cephalo's talk show, game show host career? Because Jimmy Cephalo at one time, Stugatz, as the white wide receiver for the Miami Dolphins who played in a Super Bowl, he was on the fast track to getting some of those polished TV personality gigs like the one Steve Harvey has with Family Feud, where he was headed down. He was an impossibly smooth man, an impossibly smooth broadcaster.
Still is.
Yeah, this guy has absolute bona fides in his Wikipedia. He was a correspondent for NBC News on the Today Show. He was a part of Olympics coverage in 1988. So... yeah, he was a tried and true broadcaster, this guy.
Yep.
But what was the game show?
I'm trying to find that out right now.
Because I was of the impression
he won an Emmy for his writing on the Olympic Games.
I was of the impression that there was a game show that he did, or
signed
maybe
on to host Sports Snapshot. Does that ring a bell? Sports Snapshot.
That wasn't it. I think Dan's right. I'm trying to find out.
It doesn't matter whether this is so or not. He gives off impossibly smooth game show guy. I don't know, though, and forgive my ignorance here. Billy, have you been able to find anything on him as a conservative radio host in the market, because he was on WIOD, and I think he had a popular show for a while.
Billy, quickly, hold up. Mike's right, though. Sports Snapshot was the actual game show, and Jimmy Cephalo did host that show. It was a big article in the Sentinel that Jimmy Cephalo gets a big opportunity hosting a game show.
It said he'd been looking for it for a long time, too. So was Jimmy Cephalo just out in these streets saying, I want to be a game show host, that the Sun Sentinel 93 wrote, Jimmy's finally getting his shot he's long been looking for?
Yeah.
It also looks like he is still a talk show host for 610 WIOD locally. I don't know about conservative, even though that radio station does lean right.
That was funny because we were paying so much money for the rights to the Dolphins, I figured I was allowed to choose the broadcasters. I wanted Boog Shambi. The Dolphins said, they gave me a Mutombo finger and said, no, it's going to be Jimmy Cephalo.
Jimmy Cephalo, I always had a great relationship with him until Stu got, I said on the air that Boog should have been their lead announcer. And instead of Jimmy Cephalo, and that ended my good relationship with Jimmy Cephalo. Always an impossibly nice man.
He really is. He invented the live spot.
He invented the live spot.
And I'm certainly thankful for that.
Mike, do you have somewhere in that library back there, do you have the original? Jimmy Cephalo was doing a daily show here on 790 The Ticket.
He also invented the Webstream giveaway.
This had to be. Like, what, 17 years ago? We're going to see if the library and stuff.
For this show.
Hold on a second. Let's go the way back.
You interned? Yeah, when I started, I was on the Kevin Rogers and Dolphin Hour beat.
K-Rog.
What is this sound from which show, Stugatz? Was it a Dolphin Hour?
Yeah, the Dolphin Hour.
Yeah, so the Dolphins.
That's another thing they strong-armed you.
They raked me over the coals,
man. That's another thing. You, who tricked everybody on Kimbo Camper, they got like a daily hour, the Dolphin Hour, out of you, where Jimmy Cephalo, Mike is looking for the sound, where Jimmy Cephalo alleges to invent the webcam contest. Here it is, 20-year-old sound. I want you to imagine, somebody who's older, about my age probably at the time, fascinated by the idea of a webcam and that somebody might be watching them on a webcam, and it's a very easy game he's playing to win a contest.
For those watching tonight's broadcast, we have a special prize just for you. If you can correctly identify the item that I'm holding in my hand and you are the first to call, you will win it. And good luck.
It was a pen. It was just a pen.
It was actually a severed human head.
It could have been so many things.